So today I'm going to talk about a project on 5 new selections of macadamia for production in Hawaii. To give you a little bit of background about macadamia, for those of you who are not familiar with the crop, it was first cultivated in Hawaii. It's native to Australia, and it's one of our most recently cultivated crop species. So it's got a pretty interesting background and history, especially as it relates to Hawaii. The first commercial orchards actually of macadamia are planted in Hawaii, and these were established in the 1920s and 1930s. Even though it was originally from Australia, actually most of the breeding lines and the initial selections were made in Hawaii by several University of Hawaii plant breeders. And that's kind of where my project begins, is with this historical breeding effort. So the majority of the commercial acreage around the world is actually based on the selections that were made in Hawaii. And these are numbered selections. To give you an idea about macadamia in terms of its commercial importance, in Hawaii we have about 16,900 acres of harvested macadamia. There's about 18,000 acres that are planted, and this acreage really has not changed over the past 20 years. So the orchards in Hawaii are not only the oldest around the world, but we also haven't had any real new introductions of plantings around the state. In terms of economic value, I have the $40 million up here. This is the USDA NAS data for the 2018-19 season, which was this past season. And this value is about $10 million less than the previous year, which is a little bit unusual for us because, as you can see, our acreage does not change. So usually the dollar value doesn't change much either. It's usually related to the price of the macadamia. So this was a little unusual. We just been receiving some press inquiries about this because it's hard to explain why this happened. There are several reasons why we think the value was lowered last year. One reason is, many of you might have seen on the news, the Kilauea lava eruption on the Big Island of Hawaii, which we think might have contributed. There was also a significant increase in rainfall last year because we had a hurricane come through. And another reason why we think this value might have been lower is actually because of maybe some underreporting by growers. USDA NAS is reliant on voluntary number reporting from our growers. And so if one or two of our medium to large growers don't report, it brings down that value artificially. So we think those are some of the contributing factors. I also think this is partially due to those factors because last year was the highest price that growers have received, and this year they're receiving even more. So I don't think the acreage of harvested acreage has actually gone down, which was reported in the NAS data. To give you an idea of where we sit in the world production, we're somewhere around the fourth in global production, but this is kind of, again, dependent on who you're talking to and what numbers you're going off of. The largest producers now are Australia and South Africa by far, with China coming on board as well. Okay, now coming down to quality in Hawaii, growers are paid out based on the 20-30 rule. This is basically that they have a 20% moisture content and a 30% kernel recovery from what they're bringing in to the processor. So when the growers drop off their harvest to the processors take a subsample out from that, they process it down, and then they pay their growers based on this 20-30 rule or 20-30 standard. To give you an idea, those of you who are not familiar with macadamia has a husk, a shell, and then inside is the actual kernel. So depending on the weight of that husk material and the shell material is how the grower is finally paid out based on how much kernel they can actually recover from that product. And that also depends on whether the grower is bringing in their product in husk or if they've already husked it before bringing it to the processor. The image down on the lower left side of this slide is showing some of what the unusable kernel would be for the quality, so the damage or the defects that would come out. And this is a little bit difficult because all of our processors have their own standard of calculating what the actual quality is. So depending on how they do their kernel recovery and the quality evaluations, it varies by processor. So depending on who you sell to is dependent on how you're going to get paid out as a grower. Just to give you an illustration of how this kind of works, I wanted to give you an example. So the industry standards of 20% moisture and 30% kernel recovery, going off of 1,000 pounds that a grower would drop off at the processor, you can see the value at our current, this is the highest paying processor right now, is paying $1.30 a pound. So you can see how much a grower would get. Now, if they brought in a 1,000 pounds that was at a lower moisture content, they could get a price increase based on that lower moisture content. Similarly, if they were to have a higher kernel recovery than the 30% standard, they could also receive a price premium based on that. So quality is really important in terms of what the farmer gets at their farm gate value for the macadamia that they're selling to the processor. Therefore, for the Hawaii macadamia industry to continue growing and to improve the ability for our farmers to be competitive in our economy in Hawaii, we need to identify high quality selections that also produce high yields. Another important factor is disease and pest tolerance, which if any of you are familiar with the industry in Hawaii, we need to make sure that we're staying up to speed with what our current threats are. Therefore, the objective of this specific study was to evaluate 5 new macadamia selections for yield and quality in Kona. So these new selections were not selected by myself. I've been in the position 4 years, but when I came on board, these were established trials that had been done by my predecessor. So these new selections were chosen based on upright growth habit to try and increase the number of trees per acre that could be planted, and also some quality characteristics which would hopefully increase the payout that a grower would be getting based on those quality 2030 standards that I mentioned previously. The list you can see here are the selections that were included in the study. The 344 and the 800 are already released selections. However, the 344 is the only widely planted selection of this list. The other ones, the 879 and above, the higher the numbers go, they haven't been released to the general public yet. This study was actually established at 2 of our research stations on the Big Island of Hawaii, which you can see imaged here, one on the east side of the island and one on the west side of the island. And today I'll just be presenting the Kona data, which is the west side of the island. So our research station is located at about 1,200 feet elevation. This study was established in 2001, and it was originally planted on 15 by 15 foot spacing and then thinned to 30 by 30 foot spacing, which was supposed to be the industry standard. However, a lot of orchards in Hawaii are planted on the tighter spacing and were never thinned out. We have 6 trees per treatment at the time that I began this study in 2015. We collected yield data as well as quality data based on the availability of our technicians. So that ranged from about 6 weeks on average during the season for harvesting. And quality samples were pulled from each rep for each of the varieties at each time that we harvested. This data is showing the yield of wet and husk per tree, and we had an interaction between the treatments, the selections, and the season. So I have it broken down here by season of harvest. You'll notice that in the first year, the yields were pretty low, and that's because we only harvested a few times. That was the first year that I got into the position, and the trees had not been maintained. So we needed to fertilize and bring them back up to production, but I did include those 3 data points there. Season 2 and season 3, you can see that the yields are beginning to increase. And if you look at season 4, by the time we finished this last harvest season, which just concluded a few months ago, we didn't see any significant difference between the new selections and the established 344 and 800 selections. However, you will notice that numerically there are differences between these selections, and I'll talk a little bit more about what that implies as we go forward. Another consideration, too, is that this yield data is based on wet and husk, which is not typically the way we report in terms of industry standards. We usually report in wet and shell, but because of limitations in terms of equipment, we had to collect the data based on this and then convert it later on using our quality subsamples. Now, in terms of kernel recovery, again, these selections were chosen based on a 38 to 48% kernel recovery, which anybody that's in the industry will know these are extremely high kernel recovery rates. Because I don't really know the breeder myself, I'm not sure exactly what the situation was, but I'm assuming that it's because these selections were done on individual trees within a seedling population, and so it's possible that these were artificially high levels based on the individual and also the meticulous nature in which they were collecting the data. However, our data showed that the majority of our selections were producing above the industry standard of 30%, which is good news for us because, again, that payout is going to be based on those kernel recoveries. The only selection that performed lower than the industry standard of 30% was the 900 selection. but even that selection was at 29% kernel recovery, which is still pretty good for the industry in Hawaii. Another factor that was chosen, used in the selection of these specific selections for this replicated trial was using floaters. So these are high oil content macadamias, and they were chosen based on 95% floaters. Again, in our study, we only had two of those selections that were originally reported to have above 95%. In our trial, we only had two, and I think part of that is related to our harvesting practices. We were not going in at the recommended two-week harvest interval. However, we were going in at what the industry actually does in terms of getting into that field. So it's possible that the quality was reduced because of those factors. We also took one point in time, which is the table on the right of the average fat content of these selections, working with USDA ARS. And you'll notice that these are pretty low. The 95% floaters is supposed to correspond with about 75% oil content or fat content, and so you can see that our levels are well below that. So that makes sense when you look at our numbers of floaters as well. Another factor for selection of these specific selections was looking at mean nut weight, which basically corresponds with how many nuts are there per pound. And the range that I have here was the selection range, which was between 6.5 and 7.5 nuts per pound. Or I'm sorry, excuse me, 6.5 to 7.5 grams per nut. Most of the selections were within that range. The one that stands out is the 900. Again, you can see that it's much larger of a nut even after it's been husked. And this is partially due to the pedigree of this selection. It's actually a cross between two of the macadamia species, the rough shell and the smooth shell, and it led to be a much larger nut. And that's part of the reason why it was actually included in this study, was the hypothesis that the breeder was making was that the thicker the shell and the husk, the less damage there would be to insect pests that occur on the orchard floor. Because part of the problem with macadamia is that a lot of the pests are that reduce the quality are during the time it's sitting on the orchard floor. And many growers, because of the limited availability of labor, are leaving their nuts on the ground a lot longer. And so by having a thicker shell and a thicker husk, it could possibly reduce the damage that's occurring during that long harvest interval. This is just to give you an idea of how this might translate out into a value for our growers. These are just some rough estimates. So I took the average yield over the four harvest seasons and put in our average kernel recovery for each of those selections, and then came up with a dollar value estimate per tree based on the actual kernel recovery of those average yields. And you can see that even though our selection 900, which had the lowest kernel recovery at 29%, is actually our highest per tree value. And that's an interesting finding because, again, if you just were to look at the kernel recovery value, you might have eliminated that selection. But if you look at the yield, which was very high, you still end up with a higher value than some of the other high-yielding selections. Now, to give you an idea of what some of these selections actually look like, this is the 800. It has a good kernel recovery of 35%. It has average to high yields. It's a very reliable and steady performer. There's not a whole lot of acreage that is planted out into this selection, but it is one of our better already released selections that we have. For new selections, we have the 879. You can see the kind of upright growth of this selection. Again, it has good potential, decent kernel recovery. The 887 also was a good performer. It had good yields, very high kernel recovery in this selection, but we definitely need more replication of this specific selection because although I didn't include it in this presentation, it definitely performs differently under wetter conditions on the east side of the island in Hilo. Now the 900, again, we have that kind of Christmas tree shape of the tree. It is very high yielding, good kernel recovery, has the potential for longer harvest intervals because of that thick shell and the thick husk. And the other thing that's beneficial about the 900 is that it yields and drops later than the other varieties. So there's a potential to help balance out the labor in these orchard systems by including this selection in a new orchard establishment. So for future work, some things that I didn't talk about in this trial yet is that we need to look at these selections as it relates to the Macadamia felticoxid, which is a new scale insect in Hawaii, and we definitely have noticed differences based on selections in terms of resistance, and we need to look at that with these new selections as well before we release them. We also need to look at the harvest interval effects on quality. Can we leave certain selections for a longer period on the orchard floor and not have an increase in defects? Another important thing to look at is a new species of Phytophthora that we have. This picture is of Macadamia quick decline, which previously was caused by a different species of Phytophthora, and we're seeing an increase in this new species, which has not been previously reported on Macadamia in Hawaii, and this is a big concern for us, especially in this trial location. And then furthermore, we need to look at getting an increase of our propagated material to release out to growers as we move on to the next steps. So with that, I will take any questions. We maybe have time for one question. Yes, Susan.
Okay, I have a question. The 900 you said has a bigger kernel, but is that desirable or not desirable?
So the question was the 900 is a bigger kernel. No, I'm sorry, I might have misspoken. It does not have a bigger kernel. It has a bigger nut size. So that means the shell, actually what's bigger is the shell and the husk. The kernel size is actually the same or average compared to the other selections.